I'm about to embark on a very large project of removing the entire bottom floor of my house.
And I'm interested in taking the carpeting out of my condo and replacing it with hardwood or bamboo.
I'm Lisa Rothman, and you're listening to Chew On This, Fresh Ideas Made to Order. Today, home improvements, how to make them without harming the environment or your bank account. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. 10 food trucks serving up lunch and dinner 7 days a week. This show is all about community, how to make the best use of it to find answers to everyday problems. So where better to do our show than at a food truck park?
I'm eating a crab cake salad.
Oh my God.
And there's some sweet dressing on top of it.
Oh my God, I mean.
Yeah, it's delicious.
I'm getting one of those. Coming up, environmentally responsible home improvements. Welcome to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We take a challenge people face in their daily lives and ask experts how to handle it. We're at this food truck park because it's a vibrant public space where conversations happen. And let's face it, we can't chew on ideas alone. We'll sample the food truck offerings later on. Now, this week's challenge: how to make home improvements that are both economically and environmentally friendly. We've got three home improvement experts who can help answer our questions. Kat Chang is a landscape and architectural designer.
Welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Aaron Ursch is an environmentalist, engineer, and cabinet maker. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Lisa Togerson is an architectural designer and the owner of LT Design. Welcome.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
For a lot of us, home improvements can be overwhelming. I know I feel overwhelmed. What to tackle first? Do I need to hire somebody? What can I afford? It's no wonder that many of us skip over the question, what's the most environmentally responsible way I can do this? By the end of this show, you'll have some answers to those questions, ideas to consider when you finally summon up the courage and the cash to make home improvements of your own, so that hopefully you won't feel as overwhelmed as I do. I'm going to ask the experts for their advice with my own challenge.
One of the reasons I fell in love with the Victorian house I live in is because the previous owner had great taste. Red maple tree outside the bay window, original light fixtures throughout, Mexican tile countertops. But the flooring in the kitchen is a disaster. Beige. It's beige with brown stripes. Ugh.
Lisa, I have a question for you. Is that sheet vinyl that's on that floor?
Yes.
One of the things that you can do to increase your air quality inside your home is to make sure that sheet vinyl is removed from it and that a better flooring alternative is put in place. Sheet vinyl is one of the least expensive flooring types, so that oftentimes people find that to be very cost-effective way of renewing their flooring. However, it's one of the worst offenders in terms of releasing volatile organic compounds into the air. And if you have young children, they're actually closer to that flooring. And so they're breathing that in at greater amounts than adults are.
So I can actually justify replacing this floor even though it's not ripped or anything?
Correct.
Well, it's a little bit too bad that it was put in there in the first place because it'll be in a landfill for the next couple thousand years. But there's alternatives such as a product called marmoleum that is basically the linoleum of our grandmother's childhoods. Marmoleum's a product I like to use a lot. It's made out of natural materials like wood pulp and linseed oil. And I'm not plugging them because I work for them or anything, but it's just a great natural product, no off-gassing, and it'll degrade if you take it out in 25 years. It'll degrade in a landfill. So it also comes in a lot of bright colors. Sounds like you don't like the beige in your kitchen, but it comes in dozens of colors.
Can it get wet? Because in the kitchen, I do have little kids, and they're spilling things all the time.
It can. I mean, it's something you don't want to have standing water for days on end, but as long as you clean it up within the day, you'll be fine.
I'm going to try that. You're listening to Chew On This. If you're just joining us, we're finding out how to make home improvements in an environmentally responsible way. Our experts are landscape and architectural designer Kat Chang, architectural designer Lisa Togerson, and Aaron Ursch, a general contractor, engineer, environmentalist, and cabinet maker. Now it's time for our audience to get their questions answered. But before they do...
Listeners should understand that today's experts are suggesting information which will give you direction in obtaining home improvement advice from your own contractor or architect. Lisa Togerson, LT Design, Kat Chang, Aaron Ursch, EcoCraft Cabinetry, Chew On This, and KALW are not responsible for any injury or damage that may result from a home improvement plan or project that was inspired or prompted by listening to this program.
Now it's time for people in our audience to get their questions answered.
Hi, my name's Marilyn. What is the most, in the order of priority, of the improvements you can make that have the best, what we call ROI, return on investment? What can I do in my to my house first and foremost that would make my house worth more, that would double that money for me when I want to sell it?
Kat Chang. In my practice, one of the things that I find that happens over and over again in terms of return on investment is protecting your investment to begin with. Here in San Francisco Bay Area, we live in a seismically active area. If your foundation has not been replaced, I would consider having somebody take a look at that. The last thing that you really want to have to deal with after a major earthquake event would be to repair your home.
You know, you could install a solar hot water heater because it's one of the solar energy techniques that actually pays itself back within a few years, much faster than photovoltaics. I think there's a lot of buyers out there that will pay a premium for a house that's a green designed house, that they want it to be ultra insulated. I think it's a really good investment to set up the system so that the monthly utility bills are very low. In other words, a really highly efficient furnace and super insulated shell. So that would be a way to market your house.
Aaron?
I think that question is something that changes year to year and region to region. There's a couple of magazines, Journal of Light Construction, Remodeling Magazine, and every year they put out the top 10 return on investment, the bottom 10 return on investment. So if you're really interested in that, I would do two things. One is I would just, you know, look online to find out one of those more recent surveys. And the other thing is talk to your local real estate agent. Everything is very geographically specific, but talking to somebody who's local, who sells houses in your area, a good experienced agent will be able to walk in and immediately tell you what to do. And it's, I don't think there's any overall or uber answer. It's just a matter of finding out what works in your neighborhood and what the current trends are. It used to be jacuzzis were big. Now they're down.
Hello, thank you, everyone. My name is Louis Dorsey, and I'm about to embark on a very large project of removing the entire bottom floor of my house. The reason is the foundation is crumbling. The house was built in 1926. I've looked at a construction engineer person already, and I've looked at a contractor. But my basic question is there someone I can hire to oversee my project to help me get an idea about how to go down the right road? Because my idea is to be green, and also the space has a garage, a large 12 by 20 room that I use as a bedroom, a bathroom, and a small room I use as an office, and I want to redo those rooms back into the same configuration with an overseer.
Kat Chang?
I think that in a lot of ways, one of the things that could bring value to your project is to work with an architectural designer or an architect, and they can act in good faith as your advocate, as you're starting to interview the different contractors. They can help you frame your reference questions and help you also to schedule and map out the renovation so that it's done in a consistent way with a consistent time schedule, and to help you manage your expectations around that. Also, if it's large enough, there's certainly permitting requirements, and they can help you with that as well.
Aaron Ursch.
I would also add that there has been a growing influence of green contractor associations. I think in the Bay Area there's one called Build It Green. I'm not sure if they're state or national yet, but they have different consultants that you can hire that can actually help manage the environmental impact of your project. So I think, build it green in the Bay Area, and then I think I agree with Kat, find an architect that's got a good, strong background in green construction can also help.
Lisa Togerson.
You know, since you're embarking on such a large project at this time, it also could be a good time to do an energy audit of your home and kind of see how your home is performing in terms of how much energy it uses every year. And a lot of municipalities have free or lower cost energy audits that you can take advantage of and find, and they'll give you recommendations as to, you know, how much insulation or what you could do with windows or that kind of thing. It might be a little extra information to help you on your project.
Thank you.
All the good ideas our experts are coming up with are on our website, chewonthisradio.com. We'll get more of your questions about home improvement answered after this.
Screen falling off the door, door hanging off the hinges. My feet are still sore, my back's on the fringes. We tore up the walls, we slept on couches. We lifted this house, we lifted this house.
We'd like to do a second season of Chew On This, and we could use your help. If you go to our website, chewonthisradio.com, you'll see a link to a brief survey. Fill it out and you'll show potential funders that Chew On This gives you the information you need to make the world a better place, starting right where you live. That's chewonthisradio.com. Thank you. You're listening to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco because we want to harness the power of community to find practical ways to solve problems. Today, how do we make home improvements that preserve the environment and our finances? Our experts are general contractor and co-owner of EcoCraft Cabinetry, Aaron Ersch, landscape and architectural designer Kat Chang, and architectural designer and owner of LT Design, Lisa Togerson. Let's get some more of the audience's questions answered.
Hi, my name's Rebecca Chigas. Do you guys have any recommendations for some sustainable, affordable, blown-in insulation for a house with lath and plaster walls?
Yes.
Aaron Ersch.
So blowing in insulation in a lath and plaster wall, it can be a little bit tricky because of the way in which the plaster sticks through the lath. So I think my first recommendation on that is make sure you get an experienced contractor and have them walk you through the project and talk to you about what's going to be entailed, because it's something that a lot of the cavities in the walls only get filled up halfway. Sometimes the studs are kind of thin and it's difficult to get a good fill, and that's important. The next thing, this is true of so many environmental products, but you know, things are emerging every day in terms of different quality of products. There's some insulation out there that's made out of recycled blue jeans that people have liked. There's some fiberglass stuff that's still pretty good. There's some cotton bat stuff that's still pretty good. You know, every day stuff comes out. You know, a good reference is to find a green contractor and find somebody who is familiar with the products in your local area and let them make a recommendation on, you know, what the options are.
Thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Rocky Yazzie. I was wondering if someone's embarking on like renovating a new home or a home or building a new home. Do you guys encourage the homeowners to like change out the water filtration system? And if so, what methods would they go about doing so?
Lisa Togerson.
I think there's a lot of impurities in the water, so it is a good idea to have a whole house water filtration system. I think they're probably a little pricey. It's not the least expensive thing you could do. I haven't had a lot of clients do it, so I know it's not as popular as it maybe should be. I mean, you could do very simple things, such as put in a chlorine remover on your shower head. So have a low flow shower head with a chlorine remover. That'll help you when you're bathing. You could also just get a Brita filter and do that for your drinking water. Those would be a lot less money. Has anyone else here installed water filtration systems?
Kat Chang.
I haven't worked with a client yet to do so, but one of the things that I often counsel my clients who are purchasing a home that's older is if they have the old galvanized iron pipes in their home, to consider replacing them with copper. Now, that is not an inexpensive endeavor, and it can break the bank sometimes, quite frankly. But if they're thinking of having young children and babies in the house, the lead that's leaching from the old solder and also all of the rust particles from the old galvanized pipes, that's something that is really important to think about in terms of removing. Typically, to replumb a house is anywhere from $15,000 to $25,000, so you can see how that is a huge item. So some of the things that Lisa is suggesting can at least help for a short period of time, I believe.
Aaron Ersch?
I agree with both Lisa and Kat. I would say you can get the stuff tested. You can get people who will give you water quality analysis on this or take samples of your water down to your water district and say, you know, can you give me a chemical readout on what I've got in here?
Hi, my name is Pasha DeWald, and I'm interested in taking the carpeting out of my condo and replacing it with hardwood or bamboo, and I'm curious about the environmental and fiscal impact, hardwood versus bamboo, as far as durability, wearability, that sort of thing.
Well, I found that certain bamboo products are really soft, so you've got to be careful. The last time that I had specified bamboo flooring, I took a lot of samples and actually used my keys to sort of mar it up and see which one was the strongest. And then some of them were really soft. They just marked up all over the place. So be careful of that and do a lot of testing of the samples.
I'd like to speak to that. One of the things about bamboo is it is a very renewable resource. So if you do find a product out there that meets your approval with the key test, I would use that key test. That would be a good choice. Hardwoods can also be really great. These days we are seeing what we call engineered flooring products. And so it's a different core with a veneer on top. Some of those can work for a long time if they have the proper sealant on them. There's such a finish that's actually ceramic, but it's clear. And they do use them in commercial applications. However, I do believe that the older sort of style of hardwood flooring where it's solid stock, what's nice about that is they can be refinished over time, so they have a longer life cycle.
Lisa?
Also remember, whether you're choosing hardwood or bamboo, to look for an FSC certified product, which is the Forest Stewardship Council. And they just make sure that the wood has come from a sustainably harvested source. Also, with anything that's a laminated product like bamboo, make sure that it's formaldehyde free, because that will be off-gassing into your house. I don't know if you have small children, but it can be bad.
Thank you very much.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman, and today we're talking about how to make home improvements with the health of the environment in mind. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco because food truck parks like this one give us the chance to hear from a broad range of community voices, voices like yours. If you weren't able to attend the show, but you'd like to ask a question or share information, visit our website at chewonthisradio.com. We've seen how our home improvement choices have a big impact on the environment. When Pasha thinks about replacing her carpet with hardwood or bamboo, and I think about replacing the ugly vinyl floor in my kitchen, we've got to think about what materials are out there, which are safe, which are the most durable and energy efficient. It's a lot to tackle. I'm so glad we've got three experts here to help us understand how our choices impact our environment, the environment of our homes, our communities, and ultimately the overall health of our planet. Let me ask you, what four construction activities do you think have the biggest impact on the environment? Here at the Soma Street Food Park, we asked our audience the same question. We gave them 19 choices. Choices like concrete foundation, insulation, roofing, paint, plumbing. Let's hear what three of them are taking into account as they try to rank their choices.
Impact on the surrounding soils, the perhaps runoff from any kind of work being done. I chose demolition because I'm older buildings. Who knows what was used in them
previously that all end up in our topsoil.
What went into your choices?
Insulation is very important to me. I'm going to check that right now.
Are you currently involved in a home renovation project?
At this stage, I'm just thinking about it. I have a kitchen that kind of drives me crazy a bit, so I've been getting books and mostly just reading so far. But I was hoping to kind of learn a little more today and kind of build piece by piece.
What did the audience here at the Soma Street Food Park rank as the four construction activities that have the greatest impact on the environment?
Our audience chose paint, which was also interior and exterior use of paint, insulation, appliances, and counters and cabinets.
And what are the four construction activities that do have the biggest impact on the environment?
Let me first say that many of these activities or many of these aspects of the construction projects are interactive. They relate to each other. Exterior doors and windows and insulation all work together to have an impact. It's a complex system. And I also want to say that in terms of impact on the environment, it's not very easy to be specific and say one is more than the other. Many of these things are very project specific. In terms of what has the most significant impact, and this is somewhat debated, but by far and away, the general conditions and the project size have the most impact. When we hear about these 10,000 square foot, quote, green buildings built by a Hollywood actress, it's really kind of a joke. If you're at 10,000 square feet, no matter how you build this thing, you're going to use up a huge amount of energy. You're going to have to heat it and cool it. The trucks coming in and out, bringing the stuff. There's no way to overcome that impact.
I think one important point to make is about insulation.
Lisa Togerson with LT Design.
It's one of the most cost-effective things a homeowner can do to their home to make it perform better. In terms of saving money down the road, having a house that's well insulated, you'll save on heating and cooling. The folks in the Midwest and the eastern states already know this, but us folks in California are just figuring it out and starting to insulate our homes over the last 20, 30 years.
Kat Chang.
I would also like to say that demolition, if you're thinking about a renovation project, can you keep the size of it down to a minimum? Reduce the amount of materials that are being taken out of the home? And quite possibly, some of those older materials can be renovated just as easily. They could be stripped of their paint safely and then reinstalled back into the home. One of the best things that you can do that often can be low in cost is exterior landscaping. Placing trees or large shrubs in such a way to create shading and to keep the solar heat gain from entering your home.
What does solar heat gain mean?
Solar heat gain is the heat that comes into your house from the sun, from windows that are primarily facing the south and west facades.
Aaron Ursh.
Along with potential for energy savings on heat gain is also the long-term water usage. When you put in the exterior landscape, you have to water that until you're ready to let it die. And if you're putting in big lawns or something that requires a lot of water, it has a long-term environmental consequence.
If you're just joining us, we've been talking about which home improvement projects have the greatest impact on the environment. And some of the things our experts came up with are: good insulation can have an extremely positive impact on the environment. Demolition can have a strong negative impact, so we should do it in a careful way. Energy efficiency strategies extend beyond the building itself. You can plant trees and shrubs near your home so that you protect it from the sun and keep it cooler. And finally, the environmental impact depends more on the size of the project than the nature of the particular construction goal. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here at the Soma Street Food Park about environmentally friendly home improvements. We'll also meet a food truck owner who really values environmental sustainability.
I need you more than anyone, darling. You know that I have from
is Chew On This, Fresh Ideas Made to Order. You can continue the conversation on our website at chewonthisradio.com.
It's gyro meat, fries, salad, pita bread. I think that's about it.
Tomatoes, lettuce.
I love the way they do tandoori fish. Potato, a little bit of cheese, some onion in it, and some curry.
They always have like lobster, soft-shell crab.
With a side of coleslaw and a side of beans.
Green chili and salsa verde. It's good.
Asian salad. It's got some yogurt or tzatziki sauce on it. It's pretty good. I like it.
Many people are enjoying lots of different foods here at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. I'm Lisa Rothman, and you're listening to Chew On This, Fresh Ideas Made to Order. We take a challenge people face in their daily lives and ask experts how to handle it. Today, how to make home improvements with the environment as a priority. We're at this food truck park because Chew On This celebrates community, and what community celebration would be complete without food? Right around this time in the show, the smells from the surrounding food trucks start to distract me. So let's meet the owner of one of the food trucks here today and find out how the Fish Tank food truck combines seafood and environmental sustainability into a delicious meal.
Well, I think it all started with the fact that I'm born and raised San Franciscan, and we're surrounded on three sides by water. So it's only kind of natural that we would use the resource that we have most abundant to us, and that's the ocean. I like to be really, really hands-on, and I go down to Fisherman's Wharf. It's not so much a vendor versus vendor. It's friends that I've been doing business with for many, many years, and I feel confident and secure that I'm going to be getting sustainably caught wild products. My name is Steve Scarbozio, and I'm the owner of the Fish Tank truck. Yeah, it's very, very hustle and bustle. There's a lot of things going on. You know, it starts very early in the morning. The guys get down there at 4 o'clock in the morning. I try to get down there between 6 and 6:30 in the morning so that I can get the freshest, best. Even though it's just going off of my food truck, it's got to be the best. And 51! That is our papaya mango salsa, inspired by my wife, who actually created the recipe. And it's very simple. It's papayas, mangoes, jalapeno peppers, a little cilantro, salt and pepper, and lime juice. So it's just made with a lot of love, and that's, you know, that's the key to everything.
Yes, I have that.
I love beans.
And I also have some white beans. You want some custom white beans?
Well, you know, eventually, you know, hopefully this will take off, and I'll need to get another truck, and who knows down the road. My nephew is learning to be a chef. One of my other nephews is working on a food truck right now. So, you know, being that we don't have any children of our own, who knows? One day we'll just have a whole little school of fish tanks.
I'm Lisa Rothman. You're listening to Chew On This. You just heard from the owner of the Fish Tank food truck here at the Soma Street Food Park. Later on, several audience members will have a chance to win a prize from the Fish Tank. It's one of 10 food trucks that come here daily on a rotating basis. For many of the vendors, sustainable business practices are a top priority. Today, our experts are dishing up ideas about how to make home improvements in a sustainable, environmentally responsible way. They are general contractor and co-owner of EcoCraft Cabinetry, Aaron Ursch, landscape and architectural designer, Kat Chang, and architectural designer and owner of LT Design, Lisa Togerson. At the start of the show, I asked about replacing the vinyl flooring in my kitchen. I found out that there are many factors to consider, one being the impact of the discarded vinyl. It's going to be in a landfill for thousands of years. Unfortunately, the materials used to build many homes and the way they're disposed of can cause damage that's not only immediate, but can last for decades. Kat Chang, you helped residents in West Oakland deal with toxic amounts of lead in the soil. Tell us about that.
Many, many properties throughout the United States built before 1978 have lead in the paint in them, and that lead leaches out into the soil, and if you garden and you don't follow best management practices around that, you could be ingesting lead, and that's particularly difficult for little children whose brains are under development. And so we were looking for safe, effective, inexpensive ways with the US EPA that homeowners could remediate and treat their soil to make it safer.
And one thing that was unique about the project was that it involved something as simple as fish meal, right?
Yes. Actually, we were looking to pulverized fish bones, which is a byproduct of the Alaskan fishing industry. They don't actually know what to do with their fish bones. So they sent them down here, and we utilized a jobs training program to dig it into the soil in the neighborhood that we were looking at. So one of the nice things about it is it was a local solution that utilized local youth in the area, gave them job training skills, and it utilized a natural substance, which is fish bone, just digging it into the soil and then putting what we consider a green cover and re-landscaping on top of that.
That's wonderful. You not only found a practical solution, you found a green solution, and one that gives jobs and training to local residents. Amazing. Aaron Ersch, you've put a lot of time into figuring out ways to make home improvements that are affordable and environmentally safe. Where can do-it-yourselfers who squeeze in projects on the weekend go for some quick tips?
Many local municipalities, especially here in the Bay Area, have gone to a lot of effort to bring a lot of important information about different kinds of paints, different kinds of materials that you can use in your home improvements. And I think that's probably the first place to start. But more than anything else, I think I really want to say, when you're trying to do something environmentally, it doesn't always come out that it's the cheapest option. And so one of the messages I want to present today is that when you're looking at doing home improvements or any kind of building renovation that involves some concern for the environment, you want to look at value. You want to look at the long-term life cycle of the project that you're putting in and not just look at the cheapest alternative that has some sort of promotional greenwash that makes you think you're doing the right thing while you're saving money. But you really want to look at the entire life cycle of the product that you're putting in, how you're going to save money over the long term, and how it's going to affect the environment by not having to have it be redone in a couple of years.
Thanks, Aaron. We'll put some of those resources up on our website, chewonthisradio.com. And another thing that do-it-yourselfers might try is checking out their local library. Some local libraries have tool lending programs, and that can be a wonderful resource for people who don't have tools available to them. Lisa Togerson, what are some of the biggest challenges your clients face in making home renovations that are also environmentally sustainable?
Well, Lisa, I think it's really important to find a contractor who is on board with your green project. Because a lot of people in the construction industry and the design industry, such as ourselves, are sometimes the most conservative people because we've been doing things a certain way for 20 years. It's a bit hard to change and try new innovative techniques. But getting a green builder on board would be a way to overcome that challenge.
Let's have a round of applause for our experts.
Let's get some more questions from our audience.
Hi, my name's Pat. Thanks very much for doing this. I have a house that has radiant heating, which I think is great. And I'm thinking about kind of replacing some of it's like a carpeting part of the house. And I'm wondering, would you have any advice about what kind of flooring materials kind of works well with radiant heating that doesn't sort of counteract what works really well?
Well, I think tile would be a great choice for your house because it's inexpensive and it's wonderful with radiant heat. It retains the heat and feels great on your feet.
Kat? Hardwood is also something that you could use with radiant heating. Just make sure that it's acclimated in the house before it's installed. And that means it needs to be stored within the house for about 3 weeks.
Aaron, do you have anything to add?
I'm not sure it's the most environmentally best option, but I've got a lot of clients who are pouring thin layers of concrete on their floor. And they're polishing it and waxing it. And they get, you know, a good solid floor that, much like tile, will retain the heat once the system's turned on, and it creates a thermal mass.
Can I say one more thing about the concrete?
One of the advantages of using concrete over the radiant floor is that it actually provides a lot of soundproofing. So if you have multiple stories in your home, you could have that man cave downstairs or the place where the kids beat on the drums, and you won't hear them as much.
Hi, my name is Gita, and I rent an apartment in Oakland. And my question is, the apartment I live in is really drafty, and I don't have the option to change the windows out to make it any better. I'm wondering what's the best thing that I can do to keep my apartment warm and cozy without actually changing the windows.
Well, Gita, do you have window coverings, like curtains?
I have curtains in the living room, yes.
That'll help a lot. But you can also see if the air is coming from around the windows. You know, a $5 can of caulking can actually help you keep the wind from coming in around the sides of the windows. So that's one option that's really inexpensive. The other thing as a renter is, and I know my brother did this for years, is you can buy this film from your general hardware store and put it on your window, and I think you use a blow dryer, which makes the film stretch out and virtually creates a dual pane window where you used to have a single pane window. You don't really see it because it's clear, and once you have done the whole process, you can see right through it. I think that's also really inexpensive, and a lot of renters are doing that.
That's great. Thank you.
Aaron?
The caulking idea is a good idea, but in order to make caulking look good, it actually is a little tricky. And so you might just first try to identify where the drafts are coming from, and then call a painting contractor or a painting handyman, and they apply boxes of caulk on a weekly basis. And a good painter can come through, caulk it, make it look nice, and maybe even hit it with a little bit of paint, and might solve your problem and look okay in the end.
Kat Chang? At the same time, something that might be able to be addressed is the weather stripping around doors as well, and that doesn't cost very much to upgrade.
Okay, wonderful.
All the good ideas that our experts came up with are up on our website at chewonthisradio.com. Green building means using materials that last and protect people's health, and it means reducing the amount of energy and water that buildings consume. We're here at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco, a city that's so green, how green is it? It won an award from the United Nations for having the best building policies of any city in the world. San Francisco is committed to getting to 100% renewable energy by 2020. Buildings account for more than half of greenhouse gas emissions, so the city requires people to do an audit of their home's energy and water use before selling. The city's commitment to the environment extends to supporting organizations that provide green jobs training, and one such organization is called Lead Free, and another is Asian Neighborhood Design. Aaron Ersch, one of today's experts, serves on the board. Chew on This correspondent Charlie Mintz visited both programs. They teach unemployed and underemployed San Franciscans green construction skills.
In recovery circles, it's a cliche that you have to hit rock bottom before you can come back up.
I had 26 charges when I got arrested, and I already had like 12 here and like 10 up in Washington. I mean, for me, this is it. If I can't make this work for me right now, then I'm going to grow old in a prison cell, you know?
Altogether, Aaron Buchanan guesses he spent 8 years of his life in jail, and many more addicted to meth and other drugs. He's broken into people's houses to steal their things. He's broken his back jumping out of a third-story window. Today, though, he's been clean for 17 months. And he's hoping he can break into a new trade.
You know, I'm doing this for me, but, you know, I want to make my family proud, you know. And, you know, I don't want them worrying about whether I'm laying dead in a ditch anymore, you know what I mean?
Buchanan is sitting in an industrial garage that's been turned into a classroom. All around us are carpentry projects in various stages of completion. In the middle of the room are two rows of desks seating 19 men and women with stories a lot like Buchanan's. They're here today to begin a 3.5-month training class offered by a nonprofit called Asian Neighborhood Design. At the end of it, they'll have the skills to get green construction jobs, specifically installing solar panels.
Just because a kid has tattoos and he has a rough background does not mean he can't read a tape measure and do good quality work.
Jamie Brewster is site manager at Asian Neighborhood Design's Employment Training Center, upstairs from the classroom. His office walls are decorated with pictures of his daughter, now 7 years old. Right behind his desk, though, is a very different kind of picture. A black and white photo of a young man looking defiant.
Keeps me focused. Anytime I feel
Anytime I feel like I might be going backwards or slipping up, I just turn around and look at that, and that's a great reminder.
What does it say?
It's just my California Department of Corrections inmate ID card. And that was the fifth and final time that I was incarcerated back in 1999.
Brewster says the problems involved drugs. Back then, he was a professional skateboarder, but he ended up going to prison 5 times.
That was actually my mom's birthday, that date. Yeah, so it's a great reminder for me. It's important that people understand that you can go here and still end up where I'm at.
Brewster's made it to their side. He's been sober over 10 years, and now he helps people like Aaron Buchanan turn their lives around, too. Solar is good business. It's still small. Only about 120,000 Americans work in the industry, but it's adding jobs at about 6 times the national rate. Solar jobs are also often non-union, which means lower wages, but also an easier and less complicated path to employment.
No offense to the unions, because they've done great things for the United States, but here in San Francisco, it's a lot easier to get them involved in a non-union job because there's less hoops to jump through. The prerequisites are less, and oftentimes the employers are a little easier to deal with.
Brewster's been placing people in solar jobs for almost 4 years, and he says he usually finds work for about 3/4 of each graduating class. Last year, he did even better and placed 17 of 18 graduates in jobs paying about $15 an hour. This is the kind of program people call a win-win. It's a ladder up for people who've hit rock bottom, and it's helping San Francisco reduce its carbon emissions. But carbon isn't the only toxin San Francisco has to worry about. Residents are finding jobs battling all kinds of pollutants. A few miles from Asian Neighborhood Design in the Mission, Myrna Melgar had another idea for turning an environmental hazard into economic opportunity.
It was a double whammy.
Myrna Melgar is Deputy Director of Mission Economic Development Corporation, or META. She also recently helped start another organization under META's umbrella, Lead Free LLC. The double whammy she mentioned is Lead Free's twofold mission. First, to clean up the lead that's poisoning children in some of San Francisco's poorest communities. And second, to help low-income residents in the Mission District, many of them housekeepers and janitors, find good jobs doing it. Lead Free has only been up and running for a year, but so far it's cleaned up about 6 homes and helped about 12 people begin the transition to lead cleanup jobs.
So it seemed like a natural thing to address an environmental justice issue by providing jobs to folks who are low income, who need jobs.
We know lead dust is bad. In children, it can create a whole host of developmental disabilities. Some research has even linked national crime trends to the amount of lead in the atmosphere. In short, it's bad news. Worse news is that it's present in almost any house built before 1978. That's more than 90% of San Francisco's homes. The Mayor's Office of Housing administers federal grants to help clean up lead, and it's partnered with Lead Free to handle emergency cases. There are also cleanup subsidies available to low-income families with children. They can hire whoever they want to do the work, but Lead Free is hoping they'll hire them.
One of the trainees that I have right now is a single mom of a little 6-year-old girl, and prior to this, she cleaned houses whenever she could get one.
That's Jenny Fontenot. She's worked as both a social worker and a lead remediation specialist, and she helps train people through Lead Free.
We're going to be training them, sending them to get state certification, and hopefully get them good jobs.
Trainees at Lead Free, just like the trainees at Asian Neighborhood Design, are headed for non-union jobs. Still, the Environmental Protection Agency offers a variety of certifications for lead cleanup, all the way up to supervisor. Earning all of them can take up to a year, but it's worth it. Just like in solar, a trained lead cleanup worker makes about $15 an hour. Again, Myrna Melgar.
That was the essence of why the program was created in the first place, because the wage differential between just cleaning houses and what somebody can earn doing lead dust cleaning is quite significant.
It's a shame there isn't a nicer way of saying killing two birds with one stone. But solving two problems with one job is a good start. In San Francisco, I'm Charlie Mintz for Chew On This.
You're listening to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We're talking about making home improvements with the health of the environment as a priority. You'll find links to Asian Neighborhood Design and a program of the Mission Economic Development Association called Lead Free on our website, chewonthisradio.com. When we come back, we will tackle the Meal of Fortune Challenge.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house. This was the land that he worked by hand. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. It was a love that I was proud of. This is the life that he planned. All the love, the same old love. In the house that Jack built.
The house that Jack built.
The first season of Chew On This has 5 episodes. Would you like seconds? You can help make that happen. Simply go to our website, chewonthisradio.com, click the link to the survey, and in less time than it takes to order from a food truck, you show potential funders that Chew On This is connecting with you and making a positive impact. That's chewonthisradio.com. Order up! You're listening to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We've been talking about making home improvements with our wallets and the environment in mind. Aaron Ersch, co-owner of EcoCraft Cabinetry and board member with Asian Neighborhood Design, Kat Chang, landscape and architectural designer, and Lisa Togerson, architectural designer and owner of LT Design, thank you all so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thank you.
Now it's time for the Meal of Fortune Challenge. Home improvement projects usually involve painting something. How do you choose the right color?
The paint color names on those strips you get at the hardware store are no help at all. What's the difference between
Maxi Teal
and
Intense Teal?
What about
Dignity Blue
and
Honorable Blue
or
Comfort Gray
and
Aloof Gray?
That one's easy. Only a snob would go with
Aloof Gray.
But what if I like
Aloof Gray
more than
Comfort Gray?
What does that make me? Aloof? Comfortable? Here's today's challenge.
We're surrounded by 10 brightly painted food trucks here at the Soma Street Food Park. There's a waffle truck that's kind of brown. There's a Vietnamese food truck called Little Green Cyclo that's green. And the fish tank food truck is blue. Choose one food truck that you like. If you worked for a paint company, what would you name that truck's paint color? Time's up. People here have turned in their ideas for the name of the paint color on the food truck of their choice, and at this very moment, our experts are adjudicating the winners. You're probably wondering, what will they win? What's today's Meal of Fortune? Crab cake salad from the fish tank food truck. Do we have our winners?
Nuclear green, Lisa Gomez. Faux green, Tina Silvestre. Squid blue, Chris Chigas.
Squid blue is for the fish tank food truck. Faux green is for the Little Green Cyclo food truck, which serves Vietnamese food. The word faux is spelled P-H-O, and it's referring to the noodle soup from Vietnam, which is actually pronounced pho. Congratulations, Lisa, Tina, and Chris. Come on up and claim your crab cake salads. They won the Meal of Fortune with skill, but you can also win with luck. People here at the Soma Street Food Park have placed their names in the official Chew On This picnic basket and selected at random. The lucky winners are
Louis Dorsey,
Rocky Yazzie,
Rebecca Chigas.
Our production engineer is Jim Bennett. Matt Martin, the general manager of KALW, is our advising producer. Ashley Ann Kriegbaum is our outreach coordinator and production associate. Maggie Ballard is our creative consultant, and Marilyn Pittman is our on-site director. Our mic mavens today are Erica Bridgman and Alyssa Kapnick. The sound editor is Eric Wayne. Brent Norton composed the theme music. Justine Choi, Melissa Fries, Luis Granados, Julieta Kusnir, and Connie Chan Wang are the show's idea advisors. Special thanks to our audience here for asking such great questions. And thanks to the owner of the Soma Street Food Park, Carlos Muela, and to everyone at KALW's Cross Currents. How are you enjoying your crab cake salad?
Oh my God.
It's that good?
Oh my God.
What do you like about it?
Oh my God, I mean, this is good. This is fresh, it's light, you know.
What do you think about your meal of fortune?
It is so yummy. It is exactly what I wanted. And I'm enjoying it.
Those greens are organic.
Oh, wonderful. I love organic.
What do you think?
Delicious.
What makes it delicious?
The flavors and the texture of the crab cakes. It's good. They're light.
Do you like crab?
Yeah, I like crab. The sauce is good, and I like the fact that they're organic greens.
Go to chewonthisradio.com for information about upcoming episodes, more home improvement suggestions, and a place to share your own successes and challenges. I'm Lisa Rothman. We've heard a lot of great ideas today. Until next time, try one out and let us know how it goes. Next time on Chew On This, going into business for yourself without going broke or losing your mind.
What are the options for healthcare if you're not in the indentured servitude of a corporation? When going into business with a business partner, do you recommend an LLC or a general partnership?
Can you suggest any strategies for putting the screws to people in a very gentle way?
That's next time on Chew On This.